Welcome to Coming From Experience, my virtual campfire where we can all gather round and share our experiences through this little thing called life. I'm your host, Annalise, and I'm here to bring you the raddest people I've come to know, sharing their stories of growth, evolution, and their unique take on universal experiences. The stories and experiences I bring to you in this podcast will span a wide variety of topics, from career changes to motherhood, personal development, spirituality, growth in relationship, health and wellness, and so much more. I hope that these stories inspire you and open up a portal for deep connection and conversation on topics that would otherwise be left untouched. Let's dive in. Finding what you had in mind. Welcome back. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Poppy Sophia. She is a beautiful dear friend of mine and an incredible Reiki healer and just an absolute magician when it comes to all things energetics and energetic healing. This is actually probably one of the longest episodes of the podcast so far. Poppy and I got to talking and we kept talking and talking and talking, and we covered off on a lot of different topics spanning from Reiki, understanding its origins and its, you know, impact and its power and how it's, you know, been used over thousands of years. Poppy also shared her story and how she became a Reiki healer, which is a really interesting journey and interesting story for her to share. And how we all have this real beautiful birthright of being healers. It's an inherent gift within us. We also touched a little bit on human design, for anyone out there that's into human design like I am, and, you know, our internal body wisdoms that we have that we can lean on and that we can really rely on. And Poppy even shared how she connects in with her spirit guides and her archangels. We also looked at mindset and the influence it has on our health, the importance of gratitude, emotions, moving through emotions, you know, dancing through emotions, energetic boundaries, how to receive distant Reiki, energetic signposting, and how we're constantly omitting our vibes and our energetics and our energies to the people around us. And we have a funny little take on that. And we also look at the year 2020 and what it's brought us and, you know, what's coming around the corner in 2021 and what we have to look forward to there. So this is a beautifully deep conversation. If you're really open to all things spirituality and energetics, then you're going to absolutely love this episode and you're going to fall in love with Poppy. She has the most beautiful grounding energy and she's an absolute pleasure to know and to have on the podcast and to share this conversation with. If you want to check out Poppy on Instagram, you can go head over, have a look, give her a follow. She's over at @om_chi_reiki. So go check her out, grab a cuppa, settle in and enjoy this episode. Welcome to the podcast, Poppy. I am so excited to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me, babe. It's very exciting.
Pleasure. So I'd love for you to share with everyone, I guess, generally how you like to spend your day. Like, what does a day in the life for you look like?
Oh, that's a really great question. I'm not really a creature of habit. So every day is slightly different, especially at the moment, I guess, for a lot of people also, with the kind of COVID situation happening around the world. But at the moment, I'm taking some time to just, rest, I guess. Rest and connect with family. But I wake up in the morning, I have a hot water and lemon. That's kind of my go-to. Take the dog for a walk, get outside, do some stretching. Yeah, just spend some time kind of beginning to move gently into my day.
Yeah, beautiful. And do you integrate Reiki into any sort of like practices that you have to kind of set you up through the day?
Yes, I give myself Reiki probably every day, not in a really structured way, but in a more, you know, like I'm sitting here talking to you now, my hands, you know, on my heart, and my solar plexus, which is just kind of giving me that added, confidence and ability to communicate in a way that I feel is received in a better way.
Yeah.
So it's all quite subtle. You know, I bless my water. So essentially Reiki is love and it's blessings. So, you know, I bless the water in my cup and I give thanks quite often during my day, which is also a type of Reiki, I guess.
There's so much intention behind it. I remember when we did level one Reiki training and I did that with you. And I remember you were teaching and you were talking to us about how like the intention behind it, like even when you're cooking a meal, like to bless the food and to kind of put that love, like that's like the secret ingredient aspect to Reiki, I suppose, where you're just kind of giving that love to everything that you're doing. And I think that intention and that love is just so lost on us as a society, really hard for us to tap into.
Absolutely.
I'd love for you to share a little bit more about Reiki, because I know, I mean, for me, Reiki is, you know, used in my circles with the people that I associate with, but I guess not everyone is familiar with Reiki and where it stems from. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about it.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to. So Reiki in its most modern form was kind of rediscovered by a Japanese man, hence where the name Reiki originates from. But the origins of Reiki are actually much more ancient than what we're often told nowadays. So we kind of acknowledge Dr. Usui, who was the man who rediscovered Reiki energy and the Reiki and kind of developed the Usui Reiki healing structure. We acknowledge him as the father of Reiki or the founder of Reiki. But the origins of Reiki are actually a lot more ancient, and they can be traced back to Tibet and Nepal and the Himalayas. And one of the ways that Dr. Usui began to connect with Reiki energy is he actually learnt Sanskrit, and he was able to translate documents that were written by Buddha's disciples as Buddha spoke.
Yeah, wow.
So they're very, just amazing. Magic. It's such magic. And, you know, in my eyes, Sanskrit and a lot of those ancient languages, you can almost describe them as a light language. You know, they are a language that is so high vibratory, is so encompassing, is so powerful that he, was able to teach himself Sanskrit and then kind of dissect and translate these scriptures that were written by one of Buddha's disciples. That's the origins of Reiki as far as we know. But there are so many different stories, there are so many different lots of different stories.
Because I feel like even in biblical, like going to biblical space, like, you know, healing hands, like that whole healing and you know, literally wound healing was like, I mean, I'm not overly religious, but from what I recall from the very few Sunday classes I went to, but, you know, there was a lot of hand hovering and body healing through that. And I remember you shared a story with us during training as well around how it was used. I think it was in Japan where they like applied it in some hospitals, or they were starting to see the benefits of integrating Reiki healing into the whole healthcare sort of system and practice.
Yes, absolutely. And actually I found out recently that Reiki was used a lot as a form of healing. I knew in Japan, there was a hospital, a really famous hospital, where people would go and have maybe 4 or 5 treatments every single day for a range of ailments. And maybe, you know, you'd have 4 or 5 healers on you at any given time. But actually, Reiki was used a lot in the Navy, in the Japanese Navy. Hence, one of the reasons why it was banned when the Americans invaded Japan. Because it was really, traditionally, Reiki was not used for spiritual healing. It was used for physical healing.
Interesting.
Making them stronger. So fascinating. Making them stronger. It's the transferal of universal life force energy into a person's physical body, mental bodies, emotional bodies, all of these invisible layers of information that surround the physical body. And Reiki is so powerful, but it's so gentle that it can be used on someone who's in a lot of pain, someone who's dying. But yeah, the thought that it was used for the physical aspect, because nowadays we don't really talk about the physical, the physical kind of part of Reiki, because there can be so much fear around, you know, complementary therapies.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. And that, you know, that those woundings, I think, are still very present in our modern day healing systems. And you just have to be super careful about what you can promise someone, you know, and what you say, especially as a healer, as a Reiki healer. You know, I've always come from a space of, you know, energetically and emotionally, it's really, really powerful. But it's not very often I would talk about the physical benefits from Reiki, apart from the kind of the relaxation and the stress release and those more, you know, slightly less tangible, but much needed and very impactful, results from a Reiki healing.
Yeah. I've had the pleasure of having a Reiki session with you, and it is actually the most deeply relaxing thing I feel like I've ever experienced. And you feel changed when you walk away. You feel like a cellular shift. Like, you can't deny it. Like, even if you're a naysayer, it's really hard to deny the impact that it has. And I think for the people that get caught up a lot in the science around the human body, or, you know, can be a little bit skeptical of different perspectives or different ways of seeing things, of, you know, whether that's healing or just energetics, I always like to remind people that all we are is energy. Like, when we look at the atom, when we look at every single thing that is made up in this world, it is simply energy. It's just how dense that energy is. And you can't deny that.
Absolutely. The science behind it all is so reaffirming. And, you know, if there's anything that I've realized over the past 7-8 years, it's that there is no separation between science and spirituality. They are the same thing. Science is spirituality, and vice versa. And the kind of division within those two, you know, kind of polarities, has created a lot of pain, actually. And when we begin to realize that for every spiritual kind of anecdote, there is a, you know, there's a strong correlation to the kind of science or the more physical, tangible, kind of sister healing impact. It's just fascinating. And, you know, for someone like me who is not science, you know, I don't really have that skill. I'm very much right side of my brain. My thinking is not linear. So you might describe it as more in my feminine essence, which has nothing to do with gender, but it's just how I perceive the world. So for me to get my head around the science aspect it can be really difficult, because my brain doesn't really work like that. But, you know, I talk to multiple doctors and people who are in really quite logical industries, and I'll say something and there will be a name for it. You know, there will be a scientific medical name for what I'm describing.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. It just blows my mind. It's amazing.
I know. And sometimes it's also, we have this tendency to want to label things. And, like, I think it's such a beautiful example of just, like, feeling and connecting into something, and then without even realizing, like, there is a name for it out there, if that's what, because people are different. Some people are left brain dominant, more masculine in their energy or the way that they perceive and take in information, and that can't be ignored. And that's where perhaps some of that labeling comes in, where we need to define things and we need to put it into a container. So I love that you bring that more feminine energy to what you're feeling, I suppose, through Reiki and what you're experiencing in it. You haven't always done Reiki. You mentioned for the last 7 to 8 years that's kind of come towards you. I'd love for you to share how you became connected in with Reiki and energy healing, and kind of how that's expanded for you.
Yeah, absolutely. My story is quite similar to the majority of healers that I meet, actually, which is, you know, I was living in London. I was in a job that I didn't enjoy. I had just come out of a really long relationship, and I was really quite lost. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. I was super unhappy. My soul was just lost, I think. And a friend of mine said to me, oh, you know, I've just done this course, you should do it, this thing called Reiki. And I had no idea what it was, but I said, yeah, cool, I'm going to do that. And I found the course and I booked it in. It was a 1-day course, kind of in the depths of North London. And I got on a train and I had no idea where I was going, what I was doing, what I was signing up for. And I get there and I, you know, was in this room with this, you know, group of people, and all of us just kind of buzzing with anticipation, not really understanding what's going on, which a lot of people, you know, still are like, I'm not 100% sure what Reiki is.
Yeah.
And yeah. And in walked the Reiki master, and she was this beautiful Sri Lankan lady, and she was just in a deep trance and she was speaking to spirit, and she had, you know, a few members of her community around her. And she came in and she attuned us to Reiki, which is the kind of system or the process you need to go through in order to reopen the channels that you were born with, which kind of close as you grow older.
Mm.
So she gave us these attunements in a group setting, and it was amazing. I just remember feeling calm and connected and had never really experienced anything like that before, kind of tingling and an activation and a connection, and my breathing got deeper, and you know, I kind of almost began to feel my awareness growing. I became more aware of what she was doing, where she was in the room, what, you know, I've always been quite highly intuitive. I've always been able to feel, you know, some might say, you know, deeply empathic. But it, you know, this course gave me the ability, it gave me a framework and a structure to understand what I was feeling in a clearer, in a more logical way, actually, which is exactly what my brain needed to, you know, some kind of understanding of what was happening around me, why I was feeling this. And yeah, it was a beautiful experience. And then honestly, the next thing I remember is standing at the station in, you know, in the middle of winter, pitch black, you know, having to wait for a train that was coming in 40 minutes in the freezing cold, and just thinking, I have no idea what just happened. And yeah, I couldn't get home. So someone had to come and pick me up and drive me back to London. And the next day I remember asking my mum if I could practice Reiki on her. And my family are traditionally not a spiritual family at all. Both my parents are probably, I mean, they would, I don't know if they do, but they would most likely describe themselves as atheists.
Yeah.
My mother's parents were very strict Church of England, but my mum and my dad are atheist. So, and I was raised without any, you know, if anything, I had more interaction with the Muslim faith growing up, because I went to a school with a lot of people from Algeria, Morocco. So yeah, any kind of interaction with any religion would have been through friends I went to school with. And I was absolutely terrified, because my mother can be quite cynical sometimes. And I just said, can I do this thing on you? I really don't know what it is, but, and I lay her down on our sofa and I gave her some Reiki. And my grandmother had passed a few months previously and it hit us all really, really hard. We really loved her. She was the matriarch of the family, and it was quite sudden. And you know, it really, it was my mother's mother. And, you know, watching my mum kind of go through all the emotions of losing, you know, your mother was very hard. And then I gave her this healing. And I remember her kind of sitting up at the end of it and going, okay, done. And then kind of like walking off and me thinking, this is shit. You know, this is nothing. Nothing happened. I've been conned, you know. And then I remember, you know, that evening walking into her bedroom and she was dancing. And I hadn't seen her dance in months. I hadn't seen her smile in months. And for me, that was one of the, it, you know, the it was just such a strong realization. There is something in this.
Yeah, something to follow, something to go deeper into.
There is something in this, 100%. And I just knew that this is what I want to do. I want to learn as much as I can. I want to practice as much as I can. So I traveled, I literally got on a plane to Australia, and I, every single person I met, I was like, do you want some Reiki? And so most good. People were like, okay.
What is Reiki?
Literally, they had no, you know, they had no idea what it was, but so many people were so open, and, you know, it helped me connect with people in a way. I've always connected with people. Mm. I love people. I think people are fascinating and beautiful. But the Reiki just, it's added layers of understanding and compassion. And wow, your story is so valuable. You know, you might not think it is, but it is.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So I just traveled around, you know, backpacked around Australia for a year before I settled in Melbourne and just practiced on every single person that would let me.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you feel like through that practicing, like your connection, like your, I guess, because something you touched on, which I'd love to go into more, is around this notion of us, it's kind of a birthright. It's something that we're all born with. Like we all have the capacity to be Reiki healers if we wanted to. That is innate and within us. So, I mean, I'd love for you to kind of talk on that and also how being in that space helped you kind of strengthen that muscle, so to speak. I guess you can look at it in that context.
Absolutely. And that's such a fabulous question, because that's exactly it. We are born healers. The human body is in a state of, you know, a constant state of renewal every moment of every day. And we've forgotten that. But we all have the ability. And that's what I do love about Reiki, is that it is so accessible for so many people. Mm. The only people that I wouldn't attune Reiki to ever are, you know, probably people under the age of 16 to 18, because at that age, you know, children are still developing their own energy bodies, their own chakras. So you want to be, just super mindful of giving them that. And also they're so open already. So if you were to open a child, attune a child, that they would probably be too receptive. And, you know, especially in this kind of crazy world of, you know, nonstop stimulation, we want to be able to manage how much information we're receiving and giving at any given time. But we are all healers, and Reiki is such an amazing, quite tangible step to understanding how powerful you really are. You know, and we are all born into this world so open. Children are the clearest of channels. They have no boundaries. They are pure love. You know, they radiate and vibrate at such a high frequency. But then as we grow, you know, we see things that scare us. We hear things that scare us. You know, you're too noisy in school, so you're kind of told to be quiet. You're, you know, too imaginative, and that kind of gets shut down. So there are all of these layers of societal, impact that
conditioning that
shut us down. And bit by bit, we kind of begin to close our channel because we shine too bright and we don't want to put other people out, or we want to, you know, match the people around us. We want to, we don't want to stand out. We shut down our third eye, our ability and our gifts to see the unseen. And, you know, we learn, or we're taught, to not trust our intuition.
Yeah.
So the Reiki attunements, I guess, are something that that reopen those channels that were already there.
And so everyone has that capacity in some way or another. And I guess I know, like, for you, you've definitely evolved in how you work energetically. And I know we've had a conversation, you know, there was like this connection to like guides and angels and visuals. How did you get to that place? How did you get to that point of going from, okay, having this energy or this way of supporting people, to then connecting in with like a higher level or a guide or an angel or whatever it might be?
That is a great question. And I think it's really important to just mention that everybody has guides. Everybody has angels. It's just our ability to receive them is often the kind of thing that stops us from understanding that we are always watched, we are always protected, and we are surrounded by love every single moment of every single day, no matter what you do. But the angels, for me, the angels came in quite early on my journey. And I bought a book, actually, and it was Adoring Virtue, Healing with the Angels. I wish I still had it, but I gave it to someone. And this book, I remember lying on a beach in Perth and just, again, feeling super lost, super alone, just not knowing what I was doing in my life. And finding a crystal shop and going into a crystal and then going in and buying this book. And this book was just amazing, and it taught me so much, and I began to understand a little bit more about the archangels.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so I started, and colors, and how different signs, you know, were angels connecting to me and kind of guiding me on my journey. And there were many, you know, I always felt safe. Mm-hmm. And I was in a country, I didn't know anyone. I was totally by myself. I was 27 years old. And I was just kind of walking around, 5'3" woman, just kind of bowling around Australia, hitchhiking. You know, I got myself into a lot of situations that could have ended really, really badly. And I was always so protected. And I knew that. Mm. I always felt so safe. But there were a couple of things that happened that really reaffirmed the presence of angels and guides for me. So things like I would be hitchhiking and no one would stop. And then I would ask the angels, you know, I'd literally ask the angels or the archangels. I like to work with the archangels. Please let someone stop and give me a lift. Someone would stop.
Yeah.
You know, after maybe half an hour of waiting for somebody to stop, no one would stop. I would call in the angels. I would ask the angels for help. Someone would stop and help me get to my destination.
Wow.
You know? And yeah, I think for me, one of my biggest things with the angels is getting caught in a rip off the coast of Byron.
Oh, wow.
At 5 o'clock in the morning. So really, really strong oceans there.
Yeah.
And the ocean, you know, I love the ocean. I love water, but the ocean really terrified me. And I got pulled into a rip and there was no one around me. And I remember thinking, I'm going to die. This is it. I'm going down. I'm exhausted. And I remember coming up and looking at the sky, the blue sky, and saying to myself, the only way that I'm going to survive is if an angel comes and picks me out of the ocean. Going down, knowing that this really was the last time I was going to come up. After that, I was going to give up.
Yeah.
And as I came up, I heard a voice and I turned around and my friend was behind me who'd been surfing miles away. He was on a surfboard and he picked me up out of the ocean, put me on the surfboard, took me in. So for me, that's an angel right there.
Oh yeah.
You know?
And that's the thing with it, right? Like these angels can work in mysterious and magical ways. Like, I guess it comes back to what you were saying right at the very beginning, the intention. Like it's also the awareness. It's being willing to observe. Wow, that's amazing to just like kind of call that out and ask and you shall receive, I suppose. So, wow, what a story.
Absolutely. That is the nail on the head right there.
Mm.
We don't ask enough.
Mm.
We should get better at asking. That is a big thing. Ask. You know, just ask the sky, ask the angels, whether you feel them or not, whether you know there are people there or not, or energies there or not. Just practice. What do you want? What do you need? The archangels are just waiting to help us. They are just sitting there, you know, on their clouds of golden energy, just waiting. And they're multidimensional. They can be with millions and millions and millions of people at the same time. You are worthy of asking for support and for help.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful way to put it. And I feel like often it's in those moments of desperation, really, that people would even bother to think of it. Or, you know, I know that I've been in places where I felt like I'm like, well, I need to go beyond who I am and beyond the people in my environment. And I need to kind of pray in, you know, and I guess pray gets put towards the Christian faith or particular faiths, but you know, a prayer could be to anyone. It could be to an angel. It could be just sending out that energy and kind of calling upon that and sending out that wish or request or assistance or guidance. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And you know, what a lovely thing to be open to. That's how I kind of perceive it. Like to me, there's no harm in having an openness to this sort of guidance and this sort of support from outside of ourselves. I think it's really massive.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah, I think it plays into a lot of, or you know, the fear of being open or receiving what you want or receiving support boils down to probably a lot of inner child wounding around rejection. And, you know, it's this belief system of who am I to be, you know, loved? Who am I to be supported? Who am I to, you know, live a life full of love and magic, you know, but we are all made in the eye of something so much greater and something so powerful. And we all deserve happiness. We all deserve to feel safe. We all deserve to receive support in the physical realms and the non-physical realms.
Yeah, I agree. We really like to diminish ourselves, I feel, as human beings, and keep ourselves rooted in times of struggle. Like, for some reason that feels easier for us, to be in a state of struggle rather than to be open to the potential of something great. And that fear just keeps us there. And like you said, inner child, yeah, how we grew up. Absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned about trust, and I guess trust in universal principles or energetics or whatever it might be. But do you think an element of that is also trust in the self, like trust in your own, you know, whatever that guidance form could be? It could be a soul pull, it could be a gut pull, it could be intuitive, like you've kind of described for yourself. But I guess that trust in the self first and foremost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this entire journey, I think the entire journey of healing is all about relearning trust. And for me, you know, what's happening outside of me and what's happening within me, there is very little separation. So the more I cultivate trust in myself, I believe the more that that will resonate outside of myself. So the more I begin to trust my own magic, my own power, that will begin to manifest in my external world. But also, that, you know, flip that, the more I begin to trust in, you know, the magic that is around me, by default, that trust should also begin to grow within me. You know, that amazing quote, as above, so below, as within, so without. We're ultimately kind of always working towards this this union, this balance of what's happening inside of me is directly correlated to what's happening outside of me, and also vice versa. And also what's happening in the ethereal realms, or the higher realms, the realms above me, they also, you know, have a direct impact on what's happening below me. So, you know, for the deeper I grow in my, or the more I expand in my spiritual awareness, the deeper I must expand in my connection to the earth. You know, if you're going to be a tree, which we are, and you want to reach those highest heights with your beautiful thick branches, you need thick, beautiful roots anchored down into the earth. You know, you can't have one without the other. I can't just fully believe in the external world and, you know, the magic if I don't believe in that in myself.
That's amazing.
And vice versa. Well, that's how I perceive it anyway.
No, I love that. Because I know for myself, I'm very quick to believe in the magic around me, but very slow to believe, you know, or to have faith or have trust in the magic within me, even though, you know, there's constant reminders, like every experience, everything that happens. And, you know, before we hit record, you even mentioned like certain things that are going on in your life and my life. It's like, we just trust in that. And I guess in those moments, you become reminded of the magic within yourself, and you can start to feel that shift again, especially if you've lost yourself a little bit along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what this journey is all about. And it's often much easier to put your faith in somebody else or something else and kind of bypass your experience. But, and, you know, we do, you know, unfortunately live in a society that really promotes not trusting yourself. So it's not your fault that you don't trust yourself. You know, it's not your fault. It's no one's fault that they do not trust their magic, because that is something that's kind of drummed out of us in a lot of societies, a lot of cultures, and a lot of communities at a very young age. So it is this, it's a muscle memory, right? It's like relearning. And it's powerful. And actually, it's probably one of the most powerful things you will ever experience in your life. It's probably one of the most important journeys you will ever going on. You will ever go on learning to trust yourself, learning to trust what's coming up for you, learning to trust what you're feeling. Okay, this experience is not feeling great for me. Do I have the, do I trust myself enough to leave it? You know, can I trust myself enough to say, wow, this is not working for me and I love you, but I need to go now. You know, this is not serving me. So it definitely is one of the scariest things ever, learning to trust yourself. But in my eyes, it's the most important thing you can ever do, because your internal knowledge, your internal compass knows more than anyone else, more than any kind of guide, any kind of, you know, support system, even, you know, we're surrounded by people that can offer us support and kind of gently nudge us in the right direction. But ultimately, you have all the answers. And I believe that so, so deeply.
Yeah, I completely agree. I know, and I haven't kind of mentioned this before we dived in, but even from a human design perspective, I know you're acquainted with your own human design. You know, there's the chakra systems are kind of integrated into that as one aspect among, you know, many others, but, you know, where your decision-making authority lies in human design can be through the emotional solar plexus. It can be through the sacral gut response. It can be splenic in intuitive awareness. It can be, you know, driven by your sense of identity. It can be driven by the heart. Like, and I feel like we also make internal body wisdom right or wrong, depending on where it's coming from. So usually emotions can be wrong because they're too high, they're too expressive, you're too much. You know, gut instincts, everyone kind of reveres gut instincts, always follow those, which is great. But I think even that little nuance of knowing, okay, well, what's my body wisdom? Like connecting in, because it's going to feel different for everyone. I know for me, in my human design, I'm defined in my solar plexus and my identity center. And so, yes, I'm very much an emotional being, but I feel such a soul pull with my identity of like knowing who I am and what is or isn't for me and allowing that to become my sort of inner compass as well. And that's just a little tidbit in terms of, I guess,
yeah,
that inner
wisdom. So fascinating. Mm. Yeah. Amazing, babe. And yeah, you're like, that's exactly it. Everybody, like the journey of understanding yourself, your unique makeup is just so empowering because it, you know, it's like a roadmap of why you are the way you are. And there are all of these incredible tools around us in order to help us understand ourselves on a deeper level. And it's so empowering. It's life-changing because suddenly you know, oh, okay, I'm not actually just a totally emotional, you know, crazy person. Like there is actually a reason why I am like this. And it just is so, so soothing, I think, when you find out these little gems of wisdom and knowledge from all of these different healing systems and these experiences and these conversations to understanding, wow, okay. And especially as we get older, especially as women, it's so important, you know, to know who you are because we have so many labels pushed on us from such a young age. You're a girl and then you're a woman and then you're a mother and you're a wife. And it's like, no, like maybe we are those things or maybe we are some of those things, but ultimately we are so much more than that.
Yeah.
And there is so much to be gained from learning about who we are and understanding who we are. And it's interesting that you touched on the human design because it's such a fascinating thing. And yeah, you know, just the science behind it is so fascinating. But then, you know, how that affects your kind of energetic world and the energetic realms within and outside of yourself is so expansive.
Yeah, it really is. I know you're a projector, as am I. Do you know kind of your authority, anything top line like that in human design?
I don't really understand very much about it. It's all a bit scientific. I wish I did because it's so fascinating.
I'll read your chart for you.
Oh, that would, thank you. I would love that. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
But I know that, I know little bits about who I am. So I have people reach out to me, for me to feel into things that are coming, you know, so I have one of my gifts is to kind of read collective energy. And then also to like projectors, I think are very good at kind of, okay, so I'm going to run an event in 6 months. This is what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
So I'm quite good at helping create the energetic container. And then like a generator might step in and kind of like be the movement towards getting that done, you know?
Yeah.
So, so fascinating.
I can see the projector in you in just your, like, I mean, I'm so biased because I am a projector and I love projectors. But like in that, like in the way that you hold your energy. And like with projectors, we have this capacity to see into the collective, to see into the other, to almost see into the other better than we can see into ourselves at times. And obviously there are going to be things in our chart that influence that. And of course, our human design and the body graph that we see is very much like that blueprint of who we are here to be. And oftentimes when we talk through the human design chart with a person, it's like this, the aha moments that you see on people's faces and the feedback that you get where it's like, I already knew that. And I needed to hear it because I was denying it, or I was told that that was wrong. Or, you know, that's where we really see conditioning being slapped onto us, where we're molded. What's that saying? Who were you before the world told you who you were meant to be? It's really coming back into that.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty magic. That's my type of magic. I really vibe with that at the moment.
Amazing, babe. You know, whatever lights you up, whatever lights you up at any given time. You know, I think if there's anything that I've realized or re-realized in the past 6 months, it's that, you know, we are such kind of energetic, electrical beings. And we, especially women, but men as well.
Yeah.
And the other, you know, we have this, you know, we shut ourselves down to so much joy, to so much pleasure, to so much energy because of a million different reasons. And ultimately, if something does not make you feel good, it's really, it's really important to kind of look at that. You know, and obviously there are a lot of lessons in those kind of experiences, and that's, this is a very general thing to say, but how I like to look at it is what is for me lights me up. It lights me up. When I am happy, I glow.
Yeah.
When I am happy, like my life just vibrates with energy. When I am sad, I look different. My work is different. My life looks different. And yeah, we have to kind of take control of our journeys, our experiences as much as possible, and say, this is not lighting me up. This job, this relationship, this, you know, whatever. And, you know, what's for you won't lower your vibration. And I know that's a really general statement, and it can be interpreted a million different ways. But I do believe that we are here as electrical beings and we are designed and supposed to glow, you know, as much as possible. When we are connected, when we're vibrant, when we're happy, we are creating so many new electrical circuits within the body. We are illuminating so many aspects of ourselves on a physical level, on a cellular level. You know, DNA begins to heal itself at a faster level. Stem cells grow quicker when we are in that state of, you know, high illumination. So yeah, we should feel good more often.
Yeah,
we gain so much from it.
Yeah, I actually shared something of a similar notion on social media recently. I had read this book called The Happiest Man on Earth, written by Eddie Jaku. I don't know if you've heard of him or the book, but essentially he was a Holocaust survivor, and he was in concentration camps for 7 years on and off periodically, like, you know, escaped death many, many times. And I guess with like a nutrition focus, this thought kind of dawned on me. I was like, this man has endured starvation. Like at his lowest weight, he was like 28 kilos or something ridiculous. Like, you know, organs start to shut down. You're so micronutrient depleted. And this man is 100. He's 100 and has just written a book. And, you know, last year did a TEDx talk and was up and moving. And I see less healthy 70-year-olds and 80-year-olds. And a big thing that came, like that really came through with that, was like his mindset and positivity and being in joy and allowing in joy. You know, he didn't attach to his suffering. He didn't think, oh, I've lived through all of this. Woe is me. I'm the most unluckiest person on this earth. You know, how hard is my life? And like, he didn't, there were times, and he expressed there were times that he did attach to that, and times where he thought he couldn't go on. But then, you know, he's expanded his family and had a baby, and he connected back into that joy. And like, to me, I was kind of taken aback by it. And I was like, wow, like, if we liked ourselves a little bit more, if we were kinder to ourselves, if we did whatever the fuck we wanted to do instead of doing what other people wanted us to do, how much healthier could we be? You know, how much more healing could we have within the body if we allowed for that to be true?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And wow, what an amazing story. Mm-hmm. And yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I do think sometimes it takes incredible suffering to realize what a blessing life is, you know. And I think that's probably what some of his, you know, belief system of absolutely. Like, I survived, you know, millions of people did not.
I survived
and wow, what a blessing. Mm-hmm. And I think that really plays into, you know, that kind of attitude of gratitude.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the whole thing with, you know, the gratitude, you know, I remember once, like years ago, like, yeah, I was just feeling a bit down and, you know, and I remember someone saying, you know, like, and that there is that conversation of, you know, trying to cultivate gratitude is like bypassing, it's not, you know, it's not substantial, it's you know, it comes from a place of privilege. And, you know, and that really kind of made me look at my own gratitude practice, and I kind of stopped for a really long time because I was like, it's bullshit basically. You know, like I'd read this thing and this person was like, you know, gratitude, you know, it's not true. And then I kind of had to do like full circle and come back to a place. And I still to this day, you know, gratitude is the highest vibration on in the universe. Gratitude and love. There is nothing higher. And, you know, gratitude attracts more gratitude. You know, I know people who have so much. I know people who live in million-dollar houses, who have beautiful cars, who have, you know, money in the bank. And they have no joy. They have no joy. They have no gratitude for what they have. And it is heartbreaking. And then I know people who have, you know, material on a material level, seemingly very little, very little. Those people are so happy. Because they are so grateful. They are so grateful for what they have. They are so grateful that they have a roof over their head. They are so grateful for every meal that is put in front of them. And that is such a, that, you know, and I just like looked at my life and I was like, what do I want to be? Do I want to have all of these things and be miserable? Or do I want to have maybe a little bit less and be really grateful? And I chose gratitude. And I you can probably have both. You can have everything, and you know, you can have the house and the car and the money and the jewels and the status and be super grateful, but that is not really something that is reflected, I think, in those societies very often. And I think it is suffering, it is the people that have been through hell, and whatever your hell looks like, it might not be as bad as the next person's hell possibly, but at the end of the day, it's yours, it's your experiences, and you live to tell the tale. So it's powerful.
It is. And I think you're so right with that, because a lot of the time we diminish our pain, we diminish our experiences. And it's not to say that, you know, someone else's suffering is any more than your own. And yes, like, I mean, I've never experienced anything even near the level of like a concentration camp or a Holocaust or a war, or anything of that nature. But oftentimes we try and make our own suffering small. And I feel like by doing that, we don't actually allow ourselves to move through it, because we're like, oh, but it's nothing, but it's not important. And we kind of squash it down, but then it becomes like this suppressed little lost emotion that was never really felt, wasn't really grieved, wasn't really confronted in any way. And you can often do a little bit more damage when you don't kind of own that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's it. I see it exactly the same way. You know, for me, emotion is energy in motion. We are such emotional beings, such energetic beings. We are amazing transmuters, actually, of energy, like the human body. And when we deny ourselves the right to grieve, whatever that might be, grief is such a heavy emotion, and it can really stay in the body, and it can, you know, it tends to resonate in the lungs first, and then it manifests. And quite often, you know, it is it's not feeling like you deserve to grieve, or I think deserve to grieve is a really great example. And then holding on to that grief in your body, that it turns toxic. It manifests over time, and it does. It turns into things like it can turn into things like cancer. It can turn into, you know, diseases that affect your, you know, Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
for me, like, of course, there were so many layers of, you know, the physical implications and things that can add to or help manifest the disease of Alzheimer's. But for me, I think there's a big that's trauma.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's trauma in the body that has just stayed there. It hasn't had the ability or hasn't had the opportunity to move through you.
Yeah.
And we know that. We know that. We see it. Or a lot of people see that. You know, I'm sure there are doctors that might say that there's no physical evidence to prove that, but I bet there is. There would be a lot of evidence, I think, if you look at a lot of people experiencing something like cancer or something like Alzheimer's.
Yeah, I agree. And even taking Eddie Jaku as an example again, like, you'd think that that circumstance might trigger a little bit of PTSD. You think that that might cause a little bit of trauma inbuilt in the body, but again, like, if there's healthy processes of moving through it, and he used to talk about going to like meetings with other Holocaust survivors and sharing, and not in a way of, like, you know, feeling like a victim, but just to share, just to know that you're not alone, just to, like, get that, get it out of your system, like, to actually move the energy. Like you said, emotion is energy in motion. Like, it wants to be shifted. I know, like, with my most recent breakup, like, I really grieved that relationship for the first couple of weeks. I was a mess. And, you know, people don't really understand the impact that emotions have on the physical body. Like, I started not sleeping well. You know, my appetite went really weird. Like, it was all of this stress. And I think people just discredit that, and they don't want to believe that it's possible or that it's true. And, you know, I had this moment, like, this realization one day where I was like, oh, the only person I'm hurting, like, yes, good to grieve, good to get it out. But it turned toxic, because I then, like, became attached to that grief and that suffering. And, you know, the mind games start to come in, right? And you get caught in that negative loop. And I had this, like, realization, and I was just like, the only person that's suffering right now is me. And I'm feeling it on all of these levels, energetically, emotionally, physically, like, all of this stuff was coming up. And it was in that moment, it was like a switch where I was like, oh, I have to stop this. That's enough now. Like, it was like you turn off the taps. It was like I kind of got everything out of my system. And I then allowed myself to, I guess, grieve in a slightly more healthy way, but to not allow myself to stay stuck in that stress. And I guess stress isn't something that we see, yet we know that it's a real thing in the body that causes disease, causes a lot of, you know, ill health. And you can't really quantify that, can you? Like, you can look at particular stress hormones, but how do you know that that's causing a stress? How do you know that there's an emotional stress? We just know. We just trust in that, and we believe in that. So I think there's a lot to the energy and emotion, and I guess that becoming embedded in our system as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, as we get older, hopefully we have the capacity to and the opportunity to learn tools that help us process emotion better. Like, personally for me, like, dancing was, you know, when I have just come out of quite a long relationship, and I, you know, one of the ways that I process, and I'm still processing because there is no time frame for grief.
No, there is.
You know, the idea that you lose someone that you love and have to be in work 2 days later, to me, that just is, that does not make sense at all. You know, because the heart needs to feel what the heart needs to feel. And there's so many layers. And the process of grief, you know, I still grieve my grandmother who died 8 years ago, you know, waves of energy. So, you know, you can think that you've and you can process so much, but still, you know, it's almost like a cyclical thing. It's cellular memory that something might trigger, and then another layer comes up, and another layer comes up, and another layer comes up. And so for me, a really great way I process is I actually put on like house music.
Nice.
that helps me, or like something like drum and bass with something really, really loud, and something that I can just dance to. And unapologetically, unashamedly in my bedroom, and I would just put on some music, and I find that dancing shifts me out of whatever vibration I'm in a really healthy way.
There's something to that. Like, when there's an emotional or an energetic blockage within the body, like, physically moving that is so, like, really supportive. I've heard that anecdotally a lot, and I feel it in myself. Like, for me, sometimes it's like I can just sing around the house, and like that just feels like an expressive way to like get things moving. And You never feel bad after dancing. You always feel really good.
No, nice you don't. And I feel like our ancestors, all of our ancestors, they would have danced for everything. You would have danced for birth. You would have danced for death. You would have danced for love. You would have danced for grief, you know. I went to one of my dearest friend's father passed last year. He was Ghanaian from Ghana in Africa. And I went to their Ghanaian wake.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to my friends and, you know, there was a dance for everything. So we're in this, you know, this funeral procession, but we danced to honor him. We danced to honor the family. We danced to honor his tribe. We danced to honor his friends and his community and his church. And then we danced to honor our communities. And I remember my friend saying to me, Poppy, in Ghana, we have a dance for everything. And that just made me think, I feel like our ancestors, you know, I'm of European descent, but you know, I'm learning more about my Celtic and my German roots and my Gypsy roots, my Romani roots. We danced, they danced. And you know, there's an amazing quote, you know, it's one of those ones, it kind of pops up on Instagram every now and then. And, you know, I think it's, if you ask a shaman, and when I say shaman, I'm speaking specifically of a kind of South American, Peruvian, Amazonian shaman. If you ask a shaman from the Amazon, or if you tell a shaman that you are depressed, he or she will ask you, when was the last time, or when did you stop dancing? And when did you stop singing? And I think that's so beautiful.
I agree.
And we don't do it enough in our societies, you know. And you think, why do people love to go to festivals? Why do people love clubs? We love to dance. We love it, but somehow we've kind of, things have got become a bit skewed, and you know, the only opportunity for us to dance is when there's a lot of booze around, or when there's a lot of, you know, substances. But you know, what if we started reclaiming some of that dance, you know, and just dancing with our friends, you know, and sacred dance and ecstatic dance and sober dance, you know, like there are so many ways we can do it.
And not being professional, like, you know, not having to worry about it, just moving your body in a really intuitive sort of way where it's just for the movement. Yeah, I think there's absolutely
there's something about like spirals, you know, like the way that your hips move, like when you spiral, that creates, in my eyes, that's how energy moves. It moves in a spiral pattern. So when you are moving your hips and moving your spine, you are creating this kind of spiraling energy through and around you and up into the cosmos, which creates, you know, strong connection, and it helps you clear energy, but it also kind of makes you a more magnetic container to receive that cosmic energy and that earth energy too.
Yeah. It's like a two-way street.
It's a two-way street, 100%.
Yeah, I love that. Actually, I saw this really beautiful analogy of grief in a Facebook post of all places, as you do. But it was kind of this expression of grief, kind of there being like a box, and there's a button in the corner, and it's the pain button. And grief is like this big ball. And when you get this initial thing that happens, the ball's quite big, and it kind of knocks on that pain button a lot. You know, it's kind of easier in this smaller container. But over time, the grief ball shrinks and it becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, but it never really evaporates. And there are going to be times where it still knocks on that pain button. And I think that comes back beautifully to what you were saying in terms of there are still going to be triggers, and grief is not linear. And, you know, you talk about the, is it 7 stages of grieving? I'm not too sure, but you know, you don't necessarily move through them in a linear fashion. And yeah, that experience is going to live within you. And you know, you're going to feel the pain sometimes, and then you can make that mean whatever you want to mean, make it mean. And you can, you know, feel into that and allow for it. You know, I'm sure when you think about your grandma and you get that little bit of pain, you can either sit in the sadness of not having her around, or you can remember her and you can cherish her, and you can change how that feels in your body.
Absolutely. Like, yes, 100%. Like that realization of, I'm so sad she's not here, but I'm so happy that she's not in pain.
Yeah.
And I trust it. You know, death is such an integral part of life, and we fear it so deeply, and it's so sad because we fight it and we feel like that's the worst thing that can happen. No, like, you know, there was, again, I saw an amazing thing on Instagram and it was just an image of, you know, like someone in a bed and, you know, like a kind of a grandparent in a bed and the soul leaving and, you know, the daughter and the grandchild standing there mourning, but the soul was leaving. And it's like, you know, in one realm you're saying goodbye, but in the other realm, she or he or they are being reunited with everyone that has passed before them. Everyone that has passed before them. And that's what my grandmother passing, that showed me that. And I was so grateful for that experience to you know, understand that death is a beautiful, beautiful thing and I'm not going to fear it anymore. And yeah, you're right. And now when I do feel, you know, grief or any of the emotions, if I remember my mother, my grandmother, and my eyes tear up, for me, there is no attachment to why I am feeling what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
I'm just feeling it. I don't need the stories. I don't need the, you know, my pain. I don't need the stories. I think for me, it's like, this is coming up for me right now and I'm going to feel it. I am going to feel it. And, you know, it hits me the most in the shower, actually. I'll be in the shower, washing my hair, having a great time. And then this wave just, it hits me, but it moves through me and I bawl. Like, I am a messy crier. You know, I am like, I'm a Pisces, like I am pure water pretty much. I have so much water in my jar and I just cry and I cry and I cry. And you know what? I finish crying. Oh, and I feel so much better because it moved through me. For me personally, and for many of us, for all of us, maybe one of the ways that I transmute energy is I cry. I cry in healing sometimes. I will cry. It's energy moving through me that needs to be released. And I've realized that is one of the ways that I transmute energy. And I don't fight that anymore. I used to be so ashamed to cry as a child in front of anyone because, you know, it's perceived as something, you know, it's not acceptable, you know, British culture, stiff upper lip, show absolutely no emotion whatsoever. So detrimental, such a detrimental belief system that crying, that pain, that vulnerability is weak, you know? So I think, again, it's like leading back to what am I cultivating? There is so much courage in vulnerability and, you know, getting to a point where you feel comfortable to cry in front of someone or allow someone to hold you when you are grieving. Wow, that takes so much courage. And that is something that I really hope becomes more present in our society.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely one of those things where we're made to feel ashamed for having big emotions. And a friend of mine was telling me a story about how she went to the shops with her daughter and she's only three and she was really upset about something. And the shop assistant was trying to insinuate that, you know, don't cry, there's no reason to cry, don't ruin your pretty face with your tears. And I know, I know. And my friend Brittany was like, no, her face is beautiful no matter what expression she's having. And it's, she's having a big emotion and she's allowed to feel that. And she kind of just, and I was like, good on you. Like, no one would say that. So amazing and so important, because that's where the conditioned belief starts to come from. And even though her daughter is only little, like, there's some remembering of that. Like, there's an awareness and a knowing of, oh, this person said it wasn't okay to cry.
Yeah, 100%. And you remember, children are like sponges.
Oh yeah.
We are sponges. And all it takes is one person. I remember actually when I was living in Australia and I was living in a place called Bellingen, really beautiful, sacred lands, slightly inland of heaven.
The best.
In a place called the Neverlands, the Promised Lands. Yeah, nice. And I was living in a hostel there and there was this amazing woman and she had a little boy and he fell over. And I remember saying to him, and, you know, I've always really connected with children. And I, you know, he fell over and I said to him, oh, you know, don't cry. It's okay. And she said to me, he can cry. Why shouldn't he cry? And it kind of like really took me aback. But hearing her say that, just, it was like, Yeah, why the heck? Because you know, it mm-hmm. comes from a place of love. Yeah. You know, you're crying, you're in pain. I don't want to see you in pain. Mm. But he was having he was clearing energy.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
He was clearing an energetic in his body, in his energy field. And my conditioning was stop that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it came from a place of love, but no. And yeah, that's such a beautiful story about your friend and her daughter, because yes, they need to feel what they're feeling. The more you try and suppress it, the more it's going to build up, you know, like if you actually give them that time and that space and you just hold them and you're there and you witness it. There's something about witnessing as well, which I'm beginning to understand more about. The importance of witnessing someone when they are grieving or they're in that kind of emotional transmuting state, but also like being witnessed, you know, like somebody like, so say if I was really, really, really upset and instead of someone telling me like, oh, it's going to be okay and hugging me, you know, for me, I've realized it is much more powerful for someone to just sit with me, just to maybe have one hand on me, if not no hands, and just not speak and just sit and be present while I need to feel whatever I need to feel.
It's like
vice versa.
Yeah. Being energetically held. Like,
100%. It's so powerful. And you know, like whenever I go to a women's circle, I facilitate any type of circle. You know, one of the things that we always say is, you know, this is an opportunity for each woman to share as little or as much as she wants. There will probably be tears, all of ours, probably at some point. I mean, definitely mine. I mean, I've cried the whole time, but you know, like instead of doing that thing of, oh my gosh, are you okay? You know, hand on the person. Are you okay? Oh, no, but it's okay. It's okay, which is so beautiful. And again, comes from such a beautiful place of love and wanting to help. But what if you can just, instead of interrupting her, instead of putting a hand on her, instead of trying to make her feel better, what if we just all sit and none of us say anything and she can speak uninterrupted and unrushed?
Oh, my God, yes.
So powerful.
Oh, so powerful. I completely agree. And I think we're conditioned, you know, a bit of a theme for today, but we're conditioned to feel like we have to solve people's problems. We have to step in. And, you know, a lot of the time we believe we're doing the right thing. And I mean, I do that often. And that's even has made me aware of that, of like, huh, how can I just sit with people? How can I just be with them? And, you know, with this separation, I remember I've had the best people around me, the most supportive people around me. But I do remember a feeling of like, I was kind of getting sick of everyone saying, oh, you're going to be fine. You're going to be okay. You're going to meet somebody else. You're blah, 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 blah. I was like, yeah, look, consciously, so aware of that. Don't even care about that right now. I'm actually just hurting. And I just want to be supported in my pain. Like, I just want to be allowed, like exactly what you said. I just want to be held. I'm not okay. I'm trying to be really honest about not being okay. And I just want to be held in that way and not have anyone feel like they need to solve my problem or tell me it was going to be okay. Like, yeah, I know I've been through this. Like, I know, like I had that faith and trust and I was like, yeah, it is going to be okay. But gee, that'd be pretty powerful to just have people, yeah, hold that energy for you. I reckon people would move through a lot of emotions perhaps if that was made available. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And that's probably why circles are so powerful, or one of the reasons. It is a safe space. It's a container where you have permission to feel what you need to feel with actually, you know, hopefully no judgment, no one trying to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, this thing of like, oh, we need to fix her. We need to fix them.
Take away their pain.
Yeah, we need to, you know, and that is something we learn as a child as well. You know, that thing of like, I'm okay, there are people, even at, you know, at two or three, there are people around you who are experiencing pain, adults. So as a child, you learn to absorb and it's like, and you know, you kind of inhale and you hold that breath because you don't want that person to feel pain. And there is this, you know, the healer in you, even at two, even at three, is like, I can help that person by taking some of their pain. And that's where a lot of us learn to do that, you know, and that follows us into our adult lives. Mm. Of, oh my God, I love you, and I'm gonna take all your, you're in pain, I'm gonna take it from you.
I can hold it better. And I can
hold it better, but it does not work.
Mm-mm.
It does not work, and it's not fair. It's actually not fair on the person, because you're actually from a place of love, but you are taking their opportunity to feel what they need to feel in order to process or begin to process. And it's also not fair on you, because you are going to walk around, you're not only dealing with your own stuff, you're dealing with their stuff, their stuff, their stuff. And that's where that kind of empath trait comes in, but it can be so overwhelming and incredibly toxic, actually. So that is something that is really important to look at, I think, and learning to listen deeply, which is a very indigenous healing tool. You know, the Aboriginal people in Australia are renowned for their healing capacity. You know, they are considered some of the best healers in the world. And a strong core tool is to listen deeply.
Yeah.
And you sit and you listen, and that person can talk sometimes for weeks.
Wow.
For weeks. And you just sit and you're present and you're there.
Yeah.
And so that thing of deep listening, and, you know, as a practitioner, and I wonder if there are any practitioners listening to this podcast, but my healing practice changed when I learned to stop absorbing the emotions of my clients.
I was going to talk to you about boundaries, because I feel like that would be so important for you. And I remember, as part of your Reiki sessions, I feel like you hold space for listening beautifully. Because I remember when, you know, how you kicked off your sessions, there'd be a bit of a conversation, and what are you dealing with? And it was like you allowed just enough of a pause where I felt like I then wanted to share more. Like, I think people are conditioned to be like, oh, well, someone's going to say something next and then we'll move on or whatever. But it was like, you really were listening. Like, you were hearing and you were giving people space. It's like, okay, are you sure you're finished? Or is there something else you want to add? And I don't know if you found this, but I knew you, in my experience, I was like, kept talking, because I was like, oh my God, there's more. Where is this coming from? So I feel like you do that beautifully, and I definitely want to start practicing that a little bit more for myself. But with your Reiki and with your energetic work, like, do you find that boundaries are really important for you, for your own energetic health, and I guess for the health of others as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still something that I'm learning every single day. Naturally, I think maybe it's a bit of a projector thing, but there are, you know, many elements. Like, we come into this world with no boundaries. And, you know, I think especially as a girl, you are not taught about boundaries. As a girl, you are accessible to everyone. Everyone has a say in how you're raised, what you wear, what you look like. You know, everyone has a say in who you are and what you should be. So, kind of continually cultivating boundaries in my practice continues to be like one of my biggest challenges. It's definitely getting easier. And it just shows that there is such a need for structure. And in something like Reiki, there is so little structure. And, you know, the feminine is very much about, she's infinite. She is infinite. The masculine essence of ourselves, he loves structure. He loves you know, a container. The feminine, she is water. She will just leak everywhere. And so the past 8 years or so has been an ongoing journey of continually creating loving boundaries for myself and for everyone in my life, in so that I can not only protect my energy, but I can also then hopefully positively translate to others the importance of healthy boundaries. And you know, it's still something that I think they actually probably need to change daily as well, because what works for you now might not work for you next week.
We're in that flow state.
Absolutely. But I think the more experienced I become and the older I get, the more I realize the importance of structure. Because when I started my business, for me, you know, like, someone would come for an hour session, they'd be there for 4 hours, you know, like that's beautiful and there was amazing work that happened, but ultimately that is not okay.
Yeah, there needs to be a boundary.
There needs to be a boundary. And so for me, like, probably one of the best ways to start implementing those boundaries is I began to be more strict with my timekeeping.
Mm.
You know, if someone pays for an hour, then they're there for an hour. Mm. And, you know, so there's always probably going to be a 10, 15 minute overlap.
Mm.
But, you know, and also a thing for me that which might resonate with some people, but which I'm still learning about now, is like charging for my time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because you tend to give so much and people, you know, that they'll take as much as they can, you know, not from a bad place, but probably because they have no boundaries and they're super open to, you know, they want as much as possible. But ultimately, you know, at the end of the day, I was going to bed and I was unconscious. I was out of it.
You're
I was totally depleted. Mm. That's actually what COVID showed me.
Yeah.
When Melbourne went into lockdown and I wasn't able to see clients one-on-one, that is when I was like, wow, this is what it's like to have my own energy because I would give so much in my work.
Mm.
And, you know, like I want my work to be accessible. So I try and keep my prices accessible and, you know, I offer, you know, discounts and concessions and, I want it to be accessible. I don't want my work or energy healing full stop to be only for the elite, which is, you know, something that we've been told. It's like, you need money, you know, to receive spiritual teachings or spiritual, you know, energies. And I hate that because ultimately it's free. This energy is free, but at the same time, understanding that you're worth, your worth is, and there needs to be an energy exchange.
There has to be. Yeah. I feel like people just don't receive things as well unless there isn't. Like,
absolutely.
It's so, so vital. And I guess, like, when we look at boundaries, I think we get so caught up in like having to have them all in place, you know, from the get-go, but it doesn't work like that at all. And you'll learn and you'll start to figure out, okay, that now needs to be a boundary, or, you know, that needs to be something I need to implement or change. And I know when we worked together, I was new in nutrition and I felt like I was carrying everyone's energy after the day, like really holding on to it. And just even that, like having little practices of like, you know, kind of cutting the cord and waving your arms across your body and just like symbolically disconnecting, like just doing something as little as that can just be the first, you know, step. So I feel like that's a really important thing to look at in any context of, you know, work or, you know, even boundaries with loved ones, with friends, like in every aspect of life. Mm. And so I guess I did want to touch on one thing that you mentioned there. Obviously you were in Melbourne, now you're back in the UK, and through this whole pandemic, I think people are more open to connecting online and working in that space. And I know Reiki healing is typically in person, but I know that distance healing sessions have always been possible and available. Can you talk a little bit about the distance Reiki, how that works, the influence around, I guess just so people can understand, because I reckon there would be a bit of a block, but I'd love for you to talk through it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is totally fascinating. And I think this is, you know, kind of touching on what you mentioned at the beginning, the trust, right? So because Reiki is life force energy, it can be sent and received at any given time, anywhere in the world.
Mm.
So for example, the majority of my client base are actually in the States and in Australia.
Yeah.
And so at the moment, you know, I do quite a few sessions each week. None of those sessions will be in person. They will all be with people who are either in Australia or the States. And it's actually such an amazing thing because when that person is not in front of you, you have to go deeper.
Mm.
You have to tune into your intuition and you have to trust your ability to connect in with that person and be open enough to receive the subtle information that that person is sending you without words quite often, but in all of those other ways that we exchange information, those in those subtle realms. And, yeah, it's just absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. So I'll sit here with a pen and a paper, and I usually will call or WhatsApp the person before, and we just have a little chat, we tune in, and it's just a really beautiful way to connect. Yeah. With them, see, and you know, just to kind of what you mentioned about the deep listening as well. Mm. It's that I really believe that people have this deeply innate understanding that you know all the answers to your questions. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, you know, as a healer, I am not here to heal you. As a healer, I am here to hold space for you to heal yourself.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And what that might look like is, as I listen, you are speaking, your brain is unraveling, you're kind of answering your own questions. It's a safe space. I'm a space holder. So I will sit and I will hold this container for you while you process. Mm. So that's why the talking is so important. Mm. Because ultimately your brain, your spirit, your soul knows mm. what it needs. It just needs a safe space for it to unravel itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we tune in on the phone and we have a, you know, we have a bit of a chat. And what I do like to do is ask questions that might activate slightly new trains of thought. So, you know, I'm very into kind of listening to what's being said, but also what's not being said. Mm. So, you know, if I'm talking to someone and within the first 5 minutes they mention their ex twice, mm. I'm just going to assume that there's an energetic there.
Yeah. Mm.
So that might be something I tune in on, you know, and maybe I ask, and I don't like to ask really intrusive questions at all. I don't like that. Mm. I think it's all about being super gentle,
yeah.
And asking, you know, just kind of thought-provoking questions in a really loving way.
Mm.
So, oh, okay. So you've mentioned your ex. Oh, okay. So, I don't know, that's a bit of a general one.
Mm.
But you know, but it could be like that with anything. You know, someone mentions work,
mm.
or someone mentions, you know, their housemate, mm. or my boss, you know, my boss did this, mm. my boss did that. Oh, okay, so what's going on with your boss?
Mm.
So simple.
Yeah.
So simple. But it's like hearing, and obviously the person is sharing the boss, but what is it about the boss? That's what I want to find out. More
like reading between and the lines,
reading between the lines, reading yeah. between the lines. And like, you know, if it's yeah one-on-one, like I'm looking at them and say someone, you know, twitches when they mention the boss, for me body language amazing. Mm. But obviously on the phone it's so fascinating because you have such a limited seemingly limited channel or bridge to connect with that person. But ultimately we are connecting all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. And, you know, if anything, COVID has probably spurred so much intuition
mm.
for so many people because mm. suddenly you can't sit with someone and read their emotion like that. You have to look at someone through a screen
mm.
or you have to speak to someone through the phone. So it's like your intuition, your ability to read the subtle, you know, energetics of somebody has probably been heightened, even yeah. if you don't realize it.
Mm.
Mm. You know, like we've mm,
I completely had to learn how to that.
Communicate through a screen. Like you're in Australia, I'm in London.
Yeah.
And but there is so much information being exchanged, mm-hmm. not just through, you know, what we're saying, but just I'm looking at you, we're looking at each other through screens, and I can see just so much, just codes. Just like layers and layers and layers of information around you about who you are, where your ancestors are from, the land yeah. that you're on, what you've eaten, you know, what you're feeling. What I'm trying to say is that we are, as humans, we are always connecting. We are always exchanging huge amounts of information. You know, they say there are what, 5 main senses,
mm.
But I believe that there are so many more.
Yeah.
You know, I always actually thought that 2020 would be the year that we'd see a huge heightening of the ability to communicate telepathically
mm.
because we're using different parts of our brain. Mm. And I know for me personally, I've always been able to communicate with people via thought.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, more of my students are kind of experiencing that, more of my clients, more of my friends. So that is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
So yeah, where distance Reiki comes into practice, it's we connect via, you know, telephone call or a Zoom or something like that. And just to kind of see what they're saying, I have a notebook and pen next to me, and I just kind of write down words that stand out to me from whatever they're saying. They don't even realize quite often that that's what's happening. But again, just listening to the subtle layers of what they're saying. And then I get them cozy. I guide them through a bit of a meditation just to get them super relaxed. And ultimately, all the person that's receiving needs to do is to be open.
Yeah.
And even if they're not open, I can still go in and do what I need to do. But I want them to be relaxed. When you're relaxed, your heart is open, you're more receptive to energies, and you're that kind of flow of giving and receiving is more fluid, less interrupted by the conscious mind.
Yeah.
And then I just energetically tune in, and energetically I can be with anyone, anytime, any place. I can tune in with anyone very easily. I only do it if I have their permission. Obviously, it's not something that, you know, I don't go out of my way to tune into people. You know, it's actually quite exhausting.
Yeah,
so, you know, like there do need to be boundaries around that as well. It's not, you know, all the psychic people in the world are just tuning into your energy and, you know, reading all of your secrets. That's not what this is at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just tuning in. And then I kind of carry out the healing as if I were in a healing with the person. But energetically, I'm in their house with them. Or energetically, I kind of call their energy bodies, their ka body, which is their light body, to me. And then it's like they're in the room with me.
Wow.
And I just go about doing the healing, and I write down anything that's come up. And then, yeah, but a distance healing only takes probably about 30 minutes opposed to, you know, maybe an hour for an in-person, because it can be so strong.
Yeah.
But the information you can receive is absolutely fascinating. It's amazing what we carry in our energy bodies.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I've been doing online consultations and working predominantly online for 12 months now. And so for me, this, I mean, pre-coronavirus, this was kind of my new normal, but it's definitely strengthened that. And coming back to what you were saying before, like, I feel like I could be in the room with you. Like, I could be sitting opposite you. Like, I do feel that in some ways. It's never as good as being in a physical room with a person, but I definitely feel like that connection deepening. And it's kind of like, you know, they say when people lose their sense of sight, that their hearing becomes more attuned because they're strengthening their other senses. So I feel like that's a lot of what you were kind of talking to, is that we have other aspects energetically of ourself that are strengthening and building up as a consequence, which is a nice little benefit to this whole thing. But I feel like if anyone needs any evidence that like sending out energies is real, obviously this is coming from more recent personal experience, but when you kind of go through a breakup or where there's a disconnect of energy between yourself and another person, it's like, you know, for me, I had this experience where like 2 weeks later, this old flame like started following me on Instagram, and I'm like, whoa, it's like there's like a radar, right? Like a signal where like that energy's going out. And I was like, no, no, no.
Yeah.
But don't you reckon, like, people talk about this, like, we talk about this and we joke about it with our girlfriends, like, oh, you know, boys, I have this radar. Like, as soon as you're single, they like come out of the woodworks. It's like, yeah, because your energy has changed. Like, there's a reason for that. And that's just like a really simple way to look at it. And no one's denying that.
Oh, absolutely. That is such a great, that is such, it's so beautifully put. And yeah, exactly. You know, since splitting up with my partner, you know, I don't think I was hit on for 7 years.
Yeah, right. Because you've got this
and now
close for business sign on your forehead.
Yeah, totally. And people can feel that person in your field. People look at you and they're seeing you, but they're, yeah, not only are you kind of not giving off those vibes, but they can feel, especially men, I think. Yeah. I think men can really feel another man in your energy field. But yeah, since kind of like, go, you know, processing and kind of, yeah, like lovingly beginning to cut the cords of my relationship and my connection to this person, I've had men come through. I've had an ex come through who I haven't spoken to in 15 years.
Oh my God, seriously.
I know. He's not even on Instagram. You're just like, how the hell did they find me?
Yeah.
It's just mind blowing. We don't have any friends in common. But it's just fascinating, the people that come out of the woodworks when you are emotionally more available.
Yeah. So if anyone doubts the power of energy and feeling people's vibes, and I guess we're all becoming more accustomed to using that language and raising our vibration. And you spoke about the like energies around love and the high frequencies with that and gratitude. Like, they are legit things that we sometimes will play down but secretly believe. Yeah. Like I've come across people who are like that, where they'll joke about it in one context. I'm like, you're a firm believer of this, and you're trying to read the room and see who else is. Let's just own it. Like, let's just own the belief in and what we're all feeling.
100%. 100%.
I've loved your little take on 2020. Is there anything else energetically that you feel like you can share around what we're kind of learning through this experience and perhaps what might hopefully be around the corner, you know, after this year that was?
Absolutely. I think this year has been so incredibly hard for so many people. I have to say, my spiritual practice has saved me this year. And I know a lot of friends and clients and people who have some sort of practice, whatever that looks like to them, because everybody's does or can look different.
Yeah.
My spiritual practice has saved me. Yeah. And like I said, a lot of people have said the same thing. Having something to believe in, having something to come back to, giving myself permission to rest actually and process and feel whatever I need to feel. This experience of COVID has taught me so much compassion for myself. It has taught me so much compassion for what other people are going through and what other people are experiencing. It has taught me that no matter how fractured the world seems and might look, there is so much love and there is so much healing happening. If you were to turn on any TV station in any part of the world, you know, and watch it for an hour, you're probably going to come away feeling really depressed. But what we don't speak about, or what's not as obvious, is for all of the terrible things that are happening, there is just as much absolute love and healing happening to balance it. Unfortunately, we just tend to focus on the negative more. It's a very primal response that we haven't, unfortunately, grown out of since, you know, the caveman days of, you know, a saber-toothed tiger is going to come and steal my baby. So always being on high alert. I cannot stress enough that no matter how bad things seem to be getting, everything is going to be okay. And that is the message that keeps coming through. And it comes through when I'm feeling at my lowest and my most broken and my most, we're fucked.
Yeah.
You know, now the message comes through, everything is going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. Everything is going to be okay. Look after yourself. However you can, in whatever means, with whatever means you can, whether that means taking 2 minutes to meditate, drink more water, like, just be aware of how much, you know, alcohol you're consuming, how much, you know, of anything you're consuming. Just be gentle with yourself. And also, yeah, find compassion with yourself. If you want to sit down and eat a bar of chocolate and drink a bottle of wine because you're feeling shit, that's okay. Maybe not all the time. But, you know, finding compassion with yourself.
I hope it has taught people a lot about compassion, because we've had to really band together a lot of the time, and strength in numbers. And, you know, in Australia as well, I know you were, you know, living in Melbourne. So at the time of the intense lockdown, and that's been going on and on and on. And it's been amazing to witness so many Australians getting together and kind of calling out the bullshit that's been going on too. Having a lot of empathy and compassion for what Melbournians have been going through. And, you know, even on that, that's just one level, one example, I suppose, of how it can show up or come about. But here's to perhaps leaving the year that was behind us with a lot of lessons and growth. And
absolutely.
Because it's been a doozy.
Yeah, it's been a big one, but necessary in so many ways. A lot of terrible things have happened, but there's also a lot of magic, and I have faith in us. I have faith in our ability. I have faith in humans. I have faith in us to just continually create a better world for ourselves, our children, our great-grandchildren, because it wasn't working before, you know, like we need more equality. We need more that our world needs to be safer for yeah. our children and for our neighbors' children. And, you know, realizing that we're all human, you know, the idea of separation is such an illusion. And there are many bodies that have really benefited from that kind of fracturedness. But we're all human, we bleed, and there's so much love, and we can learn so much from each other. We just need to listen deeper.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I feel like sometimes things need to break in order for them to rebuild stronger, you know?
Yeah, and absolutely.
It's a big part absolutely. Of the experience of life. Poppy, this has been an absolute pleasure. I could talk to you forever.
It has been thank you, babe.
So lovely, and I know everyone's going to get so much out of this conversation. I'd love for you to just share how people can connect with you, work with you, engage with you, whatever
sure.
that is for you.
Oh, thank you. Well, just think and just I think. Will appear.
Yeah.
Well, I have a website on chireiki.com, which is kind of like my main page at the moment. I also have an Instagram, omchireiki.com. I'm in the process of launching a new project called School of Light, which Ooh. Is a educational platform. Yeah, this is my new baby.
Love it.
Which is very exciting. So School of Light is kind of just in the process of being birthed. Yeah, Instagram, email. Yeah, I'm present on the interweb.
Yeah, always connected, always accessible. Thank you so much for your time. It's been so lovely.
I'm going to book you so much. A Reiki it's session. Been amazing.
It has been. It's been
thanks,
delightful.
Babe. It's been so gorgeous seeing you too.
Back at you. Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. I hope you got something magical out of this episode today. If you want to keep the conversation flowing, head over to the gram. You can find me at annalise.madrell, or stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes at Coming From Experience, or one word. Be sure to share this podcast with a special someone who you think might gain a lot out of this conversation, and be sure to leave a review and let me know what you think. Until next time.